Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Ben Wood is a professional artist, MIT trained no less. He specializes in big public installations and, to bring in a few bucks during the slow times, does commercial graphics work and other things. For example, right now he has a temp gig as a receptionist in the Presidio. He's also had a few career coaching sessions with me. I saw one of his cool projection projects in Mendocino, and I find him an interesting guy. So I asked him if he would share a few stories and lessons learned about being a professional artist here in the Bay Area. I'm also a sucker for a British accent, so Ben Wood, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here on your show.
Great. So, do you recall the first time you thought you might want to be a professional artist?
When I was growing up, I'm one of three. I'm a triplet. I have an identical brother and a fraternal brother. And me and my brother Brian are identical. We used to sit at the table and have reams of paper that my mother would give us, and we'd sit and draw these complicated cities and towns, and for hours, we'd, you know, use our imaginations and express it through our hands.
Yeah. And what was the next signal moment that kind of suggested that maybe you'd end up as a professional artist?
That was during my high school years in England. You do something called GCSEs. I wasn't really a necessarily great student in academic subjects, but I really was able to use my talents in art and technology and focus on, using my hands to create mixed media, really, to create landscapes and portraits. That was when I was about 16. And then I did something called A-levels in England, where I focused on design, art, and also on German, which was another.
You said the A-levels? Is that what you said?
A-levels, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an advanced level. So in England, at age 16, you do something called GCSEs. You do about 10, 11 subjects. And if you do well enough, you get to go to do A-levels, and that's sort of like preparation to go to university. So I realized that I wanted to go to university. There's a couple of tracks in England. One is to do a technical technical track, go into some kind of trade, and the other is to go to university. I wanted to do that. It wasn't necessarily expected from my family, but that's something I wanted to do, so I got into doing A-levels.
Did you get additional encouragement from teachers or parents to be an artist, or was it the standard discouragement? Oh, you don't want to do art, you'll be starving.
No, I had a very supportive family. My mother is from a artistic background. She makes clothes. She'd been a dressmaker, and her mother had been. From really amazing teachers, actually, from art and some sort of hands-on technology teachers. They were very supportive, and that's when I was, realizing that there was a real opportunity for me to, take ideas and things in my imagination and bring them to life in the real world. Just if I spend a little bit of time on it and dedication, and I was really passionate about it, and I still am.
Was your dad equally supportive?
My dad is was a shopkeeper. I think he might, maybe been a little less. My dad is also a singer, so he has a creative background, but maybe he was a little concerned about the precarious nature of the art world, being an artist.
Right. So you were doing these A-levels. Is that like a equivalent of a bachelor's degree?
No, A-levels is equivalent of the last couple years of high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so then in high school, after you completed those, what did you decide to do? Did you get a lot of encouragement from your teachers? Oh, you should be a professional artist. Did you know what was the decision process at that point?
I obviously it's saw that I had some talent and I was doing well, and I got into what's called an art college in England. If you're going to do the art track, I don't know why you're not going to be a doctor, but you have to do an extra year, which is a foundation year, which may be useful in order for you to figure out what specialization you're going to take for the next 3 years. It's not like in the United States where you get a diverse, well-rounded education. In England, you go to college, at least what I know of it. I didn't end up going to college in England, and I end up coming here. But you focus on a subject for the next 3 years. And so it's to, you do a foundation year, and then you figure out what you really want to do for the next 3 years.
What did you specialize in?
I specialized in graphics, yeah. So graphics, I'd walk along the street and I'd be thinking of, wouldn't it be interesting? I got into Photoshop back, this was back in 98, it's not that long ago, but, you know, it was relatively early days of that, you know, Photoshop using the computer. And because of that, I had the opportunity to come here to California on a 2-week visit. And I got to go to community college. And that really sort of took me out of the trajectory of my life. I was, you know, that up until that point expecting to go to college in England. And I had this opportunity to come here to California, and it changed my life.
When you say you had an opportunity to come, I mean, community colleges are open admission. What do you mean you had an opportunity? Anybody, if you could afford the airfare, could come to a community college in California. What do you mean you had an opportunity?
Well, I mean, my family wasn't... a well-off family, so I would never expect to even come to the United States. I had the opportunity because a teacher asked me, saw that I was using the computer to create art, and even though it was only in 1998, it was still relatively new. So because of that, I was selected one of five students to come on a 2-week exchange visit here, and all the expenses were paid. It was an amazing opportunity.
Oh, I see. And how was that such a transformation? I mean, it was clearly a validation of your potential. How was that, if any, in any way, a transformational experience for you? What did that lead to next?
Well, you know, it broadened my horizons. Really, I'd never been out of the country apart from a couple trips here and there to Europe, mainland Europe. I had the opportunity to learn some of these new softwares that were, you know, on the cutting edge at the time, and to take sort of this idea, a static idea of, you know, creating visuals, like static graphics, to bring them to life as animated graphics. And that's really the path that I continued on. Like, how can I, you know, use the computer to create these animated graphics that can... I can bring ideas to life.
Of course, when I think about animated graphics, I think about those annoying banner ads with those stupid little, you know, chickadees going across the screen, and I just want to click, where's the X, so I can get rid of it. How are animations used in a more pleasurable way than that?
Well, I know a lot about banner ads because that's how actually I've made something of a living over the past number of years. Those are more corporate, you know, advertising based. So you're trying to figure out what's going to engage the viewer in the least amount of time to get them to click.
Does that really engage? Listen, I mean, I would think if any company, you know, their reputation is going to get worse if they have those stupid banner ads. They've lasted a long. Now I think they're going away. There aren't so many of these banner ads. Am I right? How? Why would they? Nobody. There isn't a human being on the planet who likes banner ads. Why did they last so long? And why? Maybe are they still even in existence?
They're still in existence. I don't know the specifics about that. I've been making them. What I can say in terms of the art, the creative work that I do is that, you know, I'm doing so much more than bringing graphics to life. I'm bringing subjects and ideas to life through and histories and stories. That's what I'm doing at least in the fine art realm.
The fine art realm, I understand. Tell me, just, you know, we're going to go back to the chronology in a moment, mm-hmm. but. Give us a window into the thought process of a high-quality banner ad maker. What goes into that that is not mechanical and stupid? Because all I can see is the name of the stupid company and the stupid chickadee going across the screen. What's more sophisticated than that?
It actually can be pretty involved. You've got storyboards. There's a back and forth between me and the art director, which can go on for a while.
Tell me a specific. No, tell me the banner ad that you are proudest of that required you to do, you know, a fair amount of sophisticated thinking that might enlighten our listeners.
Sophisticated thinking on banner. It turns out that sometimes the most effective banner is the simplest banner. It turns out that, you know, I spent a lot of time creating these quite complicated animated ads that took a lot of time and were really a lot of fun, but what was most effective, what got the user to click and to be engaged, was a brief succinct moment that really drew them in. And
wow. Do you have to have much business sense or business? You know, I had some guy tell me, I don't remember, it was a client or a caller or whatever, who said that in order to really be good at creating ads, you can't just be this great graphic artist person. You also have to have a business sense. Is that accurate? Is that BS?
Well, sure, especially in the world that I've been in, which is a freelance one. You have to, you know, be able to make the client happy to do really good work. Not only that, but you have to constantly be in touch with a variety of, you know, different clients
Tell me something specific, because I wanted, this is abstract, I want my listeners to get a feel for how this artist guy is usually very non-profit. Most artists are very non-profity. They don't like corporations and the rest of it. They just do it to, they work for the corporations to make a living. By the way, is that you? Is that pretty much define you?
To an extent.
Yeah. Okay, right. So, but tell me about something specific, either an interaction you had with your corporate client or a thought process you had or something that could take us into the world of this banner ad guy.
Mm-hmm. A thought process.
Something, anything specific. I just want to get away from the abstract, or if it's too hard, we'll just switch topics. Let's switch topics. Okay.
We can come back to that.
Let's go. Okay, so you had this 2-week transformational experience. You got exposed to the use of the latest software. This was back in 1998, and now you're back in England. What was the next major moment in your life as an artist?
I got to go to the Art Institute here in San Francisco, and
I mean, that's like wildly expensive. I mean, most people who go to the Art Institute never even begin to pay back their student loans.
Right.
So you got to go.
I was fortunate to get a scholarship.
Okay,
Go back to college in England.
Okay,
and I didn't, pay for the whole. I mean, I certainly couldn't afford it today. It's something like $46,000.
I know, it's
ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
But it was there I created this project, which I animated the mural of Diego Rivera, and I brought it to life. There's iconic. There's three murals of Diego Rivera. This is a mural that he has on Chestnut Street. And so I thought, what would happen if you brought to life this mural of Diego Rivera and were able to update it, with contemporary figures and have the audience engaged not only with the historic mural but with a contemporary version of it, and have them, in between the two, the historic and the contemporary one. So I composited a lot of the teachers and students at the time onto this mural, and I shot it in 3D with a camera that I built, two cameras next to each other, and you'd wear these 3D glasses that you could see the animation of the Rivera mural with contemporary viewers, contemporary figures. So the students were at the main figure in the center. I was updating it, so it had a male in the figure. I was changing that. It would be a male and female. At the time I was there at this Art Institute, and it's much the case frequently there, and in art schools, it's uncertain. So what I wanted to say is, the students are the most important thing here. You need to make sure that you're serving the students, and that's really what it was about.
So I want to make sure I understand. So there was this static mural of Diego Rivera, and you used projection. You used a high brightness projection to project in 3D, like popping out of what seeming to pop out of the mural, pictures of kids, students, and other contemporary people as a way of visually making 19th century Diego Rivera contemporary and resonating with current people. Is that correct?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, cool. And now that's really cool. That's impressive. So did that launch a career doing that, or was it a one-off? Oh, let me let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Ben Wood. He is a professional artist. We're walking through his life to offer lessons for all of us. So many people have a creative or artistic side that doesn't give voice, or we think, you know, damn it, I'm sick and tired of regular jobs. Should I be an artist? Or maybe I'm an artist, I'm sick and tired of being an artist. I want to get a straight job. So we're trying to talk about lessons learned from the life of a real-life artist who's been around long enough. He's not like he's 80. He's like 37. But who can walk us through some of the realities of life as an artist. He doesn't have a book. He's not trying to sell a book. He's not doing any of that. We're trying to get to authenticity, which is, frankly, what KELW is really about. And I want to tell you a brief story before I go back to Ben. A few weeks ago, station manager Matt Martin made a thought that maybe the listeners would be better served by having another program replace mine. And I announce it on the air. And I then get a few days later, I get an email from him saying, the listeners really, you know, want to keep you on the air. And so I've changed my mind. That's, you know, so impressed me. Every damn station I've ever, you know, been associated with say they care about the listeners, but they really act independent of it. They respond to the advertisers. They do whatever. But this guy not only had the, you know, wasn't like this conservative guy, stick to my guns. He actually changed his mind and responded only because of you. And so just very briefly, I'd like to invite you. This is the only time between now and May when we're going to ask for your support. So if you want to support really listener-responsive radio and KALW and work with Marty Nemco, I invite you to go to KALW.org and push the donate button. And it'll be just a really nice support for my show. I don't get a dime of it, but it's a support for public radio, KLW, Matt Martin, the station manager, and yeah, work with Marty Nemco. And as a thank you, if you pledge $100 or donate $100 or more, as my thank you to you, I will give you an autographed copy of both of my new books. Both came out in 2017. One is called Modern Fables. They're short stories with real life lessons embedded, as well. I've written, believe it or not, 3,200 articles. My best 66 are in the book called The Best of Marty Nemco, second edition. Both are yours, autographed for $100. And the good feeling of being a supporter of public, non-commercial, listener-responsive radio. Just go to KALW.org or you can call 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And in the spirit of KELW's warning, short pitch pledge breaks, whatever you want to call it, donation breaks, it's over. Back to Ben Wood, artist and good guy. What that Diego Rivera sounds really cool, three-dimensional, 3D, very immersive, bringing it up to date, awesome. Did that end up being a one-off or something that launched your career as a professional artist?
Yeah, that was what that, you know, that gave me I saw the opportunity to, you know, or the possibility of doing a public project, and what that, you know, from there, I made a proposal to do a project with Reckon Parks here in San Francisco to illuminate Coit Tower, and so that was the next project where I made a proposal. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's really not easy and straightforward being an artist, and you know, all along I've been doing various things, from teaching at the different colleges and doing these animated ad work and various other things in tandem, while I've also had this career and passion and drive to do this artwork. So, but it's been something that I've consistently done, and I'm working on all the time, new projects, proposals, and ideas. And it's something that I've worked on over, done a couple projects a year for the past 10, 15 years.
Now, dear listeners, this is always true. Of course, you heard it again. It probably makes you vomit. But the idea of having a niche. He's identified a very interesting niche, public projections. Why is that such an interesting niche? Because whether it be museums or cities or whatever, there is often an attempt to try to make something really cool and special that's public. So it's a great niche. But even though it's a great niche, Ben said it wasn't easy. It isn't easy. What have you learned about the art of trying to get significant money. I mean, the cities and the big companies, they have serious dollars. What have you, and that's the only way you can really make a living, because if you, you know, it's really hard to make a living on a little crappy, you know, things. You got to get paid, you know, like tens of thousands of bucks for a major project that's going to take you months.
Right.
What have you learned that you want to share with other artists about how to go about trying to get the attention of moneyed sources for your art?
What I've learned is that there's no silver bullet. There is no answer. You've got to do a lot of different things. You've got to, you know, you've got to be really mostly following your inner compass, you know, which opportunities and projects you think are going to be best suited for your work. And making relationships with organizations and people that you have similar corresponding ideas and
the implicit message, it really is true. It's true of almost every job seeker. It's partly relationships. It's partly throwing a lot of crap against the wall and seeing what sticks. And there's certain relentlessness, which is almost antithetical to the artist personality, especially you're a Brit, which is about more being understated. It requires not aggressiveness, but ongoing assertiveness.
Tenacity.
Isn't that true, that it's kind of antithetical to the general artist's personality, which is not very marketing-oriented, so it's against type to have to do all this crap?
Well, this marketing stuff? Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I'm in the process of becoming a citizen. It's a little bit like that. I've been thinking about it. You got to do good work. I know it's very general, but you've got to be prepared to tell a good story, and you've got to sort of play within rules when it comes to this kind of thing with art. So it's really be about being consistent. Every day, or having a clear path or focus.
That consistent thing is really important. You know, artists as a group tend to be artistic is to be creative, to not be laser focused. It's to be a little flighty. It's to be a little up and down. And yet, paradoxically, to make it commercially, you're saying your butt has got to be in the chair at, say, 9 in the morning every day, and reaching out to your past contacts, making new ones, keeping a spreadsheet or a database of all your contacts, is it that?
Yeah, it's really about being scientific. Yeah, I have a spreadsheet that I track all these grants. You know, I applied for 15, 20 grants last year. I got one. And that one I got because I had a personal relationship, you know.
It's so important, especially in the, you know, I saw last night, I saw Chicago again, the play, for the sixth time, but I knew somebody who was in it. And this was in Napa. This is not like Broadway. This is not even San Francisco. And I was blown away by the talent at this place called the Napa Valley Community Theater Center or whatever. They were unbelievable. The desire, the passion to do art is so strong among so many people that the only ones who can survive really have to be scientific, tenacious, etc. Is that fair?
Probably, yeah.
And even now, at 37, and you ended up at MIT. Tell me about you and him. This is, he not only went to the San Francisco Art Institute, or is it the Academy of Art?
San Francisco Art Institute.
Yeah, that, right. But you also were trained at MIT. What was that about, and how'd you do that, and how'd you get in?
Well, first of all, I'd like to put a plug in for the community college. I think of all the schools that I went to, I think that was the best, you know, had the best teaching.
Yes.
Really focused teaching, and, you know, I learned the most in terms of skills.
But it's $12 a unit instead of $10 zillion
right,
a unit.
MIT was another story. It was potentially a great opportunity where I could meet great minds and have access to great technology and information. In a place like that, sometimes people can be a little self-absorbed and focused on their own work rather than on the students.
Was it a degree you got there, a certificate? What did you do at MIT? And how'd you...
There's a very small program, a visual arts program now. It's called the Arts, Culture, and Technology program, in which, you know, you're situated with the Department of Architecture, you know, urban studies sort of environment. You're focusing on doing socially engaged work in the outside world. It's not necessarily focused on, you know, a lot of these art programs are focusing on making the world a better place, but not necessarily you know, thinking about the student and what, you know, their future and their priorities and needs when they get out of school. They don't really prepare you for that. What it is, it's a sort of breeding ground for you to learn how to. It sort of gives you getting through that program. Sort of, you can at least prove to yourself that you're prepared, you're able to live up to the task of, taking on a hard fight.
So some of it is really sizzle rather than steak. You get the MIT name on your diploma, you get to be around smart people, which has its advantages. Yeah. But you're saying that in the end, it cost you probably a pretty penny, and yet the community college, I mean, that's a very important message to the listeners, dear listeners, really. Community colleges are the most underrated. We tend to think less of them because they're open admission and because they're cheap. But the instructors tend to be really practical, and they tend to be down-to-earth people. And unlike MIT, where the professors are obsessed with their research and their grad students and their grants and all the rest of that, the community college teachers are about you. So please, don't just jump for the sizzle to the designer label. Am I overstating the case, or do you think I'm right? You've been
to
both.
I don't know about other fields. All I know is about art. And, you know, it's certainly whatever school you go to, whether it's MIT or, you know, art school, wherever, it's a tough field to be in. And certainly I can't downplay the fact that I think it does open up doors. But mostly people are confused about, you know, an artist with that was from, you know, went to school at MIT. What does that mean?
Mm. So let's say I was a – let's bring you up to date right now. So right now you're in one of those, you know, you've got – tell me all the cool projects you've got in the hopper and what you're doing in your day job to bring in, you know, some money.
Yeah, I've really got a great project coming up here in San Francisco next month with the Huss Lilienthal House. We got a grant of the San Francisco Heritage got a grant. They're the custodians of the Huss Lilienthal House, which is being – restored at the moment, and we've been planning a project, which is to project images of the Huss and Lilienthal family onto the windows of the house. And, you know, I'm really excited about this because it's an important part of the Jewish history of San Francisco. I happen to be Jewish also, and I am also from a German Jewish family, so it's the first opportunity I have to talk about that important part of my heritage.
Sounds great. Yeah, do you want to talk about anything else, or you want to talk about your day job?
Meanwhile, I'm working now at, I just got this temp gig at the Presidio, which is a really great opportunity to be in a beautiful location. It's a pretty straightforward job, one that I wouldn't have expected to be doing. It's working at the front desk. But it's great because I'm getting to meet really cool people, and, you know, potentially there could be other opportunities there.
Dear listeners, that's also a takeaway. The guys, a pretty esteemed artist who's done major projects. He's got training at MIT, and yet he doesn't have an ego. He's taken a job in a good environment where he can get to meet interesting people, and it might be a launch pad, but it's worth, and it really is smart, to even be a receptionist in a place. But we talked off the air, and Ben is a very likable, nice guy, and he's a smart guy. And I would bet a lot of money that if he wants another straight job, it's just a 2-month just temp gig, but I would bet that he's going to meet some. He told me, I'm meeting everybody from the head of the Golden Gate Conservancy. You know, he's going to meet people, and one of the great keys to success in life is putting yourself around good people and people who could be of help, and then just being your best self. He's not treating it like a throwaway. He's treating it like a launch pad. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, no, it's a really great opportunity. I'm really excited to be there. No, it's actually a place that I've really sort of aspired to be in. So it's beautiful. You know, there's great people. And it's a job that I can do. So, you know, I'm really, really excited about it.
Okay, one more catch-all question before I let you go. If I am an artist and thinking about whether I should pursue it all the way, like they tell you, follow your passion and really work 50 hours a week to make a living as an artist, or not, what would you tell me? And honestly, if I'm your brother, what would you tell me and why?
Well, it's a great question. It's one I sort of, a lot of people struggle with, and it's one that I've, you know, maybe perhaps naively thought that I could aspire to do, which is to be a professional artist. I would say no, you should probably do, you know, have some other kind of work. And, you know, in the off times, in those moments where you don't have work, is to do this passionate work. You know, I'm not giving up on that dream. It's really important to me. I'm going to continue doing these great projects, and, you know, perhaps down the line, I'm playing a long game, you know. It might, you know, we'll see how it goes, you know.
And if people want to contact you perhaps about work, maybe getting to do major, am I correct that the rights, why don't you summarize the kind of work you would love to do, and maybe there's a listener who could give you a lead on one of those cool kind of projects. How would you summarize the kind of work you like to do?
Well, the kind of work in terms of my artwork is,
yes,
large-scale animated, you know, public art engaged with, you know, social and historical subjects projected onto the outside and the inside of buildings. It could be video, it could be stills, animated, other kind of animated graphics.
Or 3D. So
or 3D using sound. Another interesting cool project which I've been working on with, actually, with the help of Marty, is it's called The People Of, and I did it up in Mendocino. It was an interview. I over a period of 2 days, I interviewed about 50 people about what they do, their jobs. I photographed them and asked them questions, and it was, you know, this is a potentially scalable project. I projected the text and the image of the people onto the building in the center of town. And this is a project I like to do in other cities in Santa Fe. Elsewhere in the United States, especially these days, I think it's important that we, you know, we engage and talk to people outside of the city, people in rural areas and other areas that we don't, you know, we're not normally exposed to.
Now, I had deliberately, I'm going to ask for your email address so people can contact you in a minute, but I deliberately didn't want to say that you were my client. You know, I didn't want to make it seem like that, but since you outed me, let's say we can take advantage of that for a moment. Is there one or two things that you've learned from working with me that might be of value to our listeners?
Oh, working with Bonnie. Well, Marty is, you know, he's very, you know, human, and, you know, he's not, you know, it's not like I'm putting my applications and things into a vacuum with Marty. Let's see, there's just so many things. I'm not sure what to say. Maybe we can come back to it.
All right, some other time. Okay, so let's just get your email. If somebody is interested, might have a lead for Ben for a public projection art, whether it be video or still on the outside or inside of a building, whether it be a corporation or a government agency or simply a city landmark or whatever, what's the email address they should use, or phone number? Do you want to give your phone number, your email address? What do you want to give?
Let me give you my website, because you could easily find me through that. It's www.benwood.net.
Perfect. Ben Wood, thanks very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you. Thanks, Marty. It's a pleasure.
I hope it wasn't too torturous.
No, I'm really glad that you're on, you're staying on. I'm so glad to the station, KLW, for keeping you on air. I think
I think I think there's somebody calling, and I should have done this earlier, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can take a call, I'll give out the phone number. So if you would like to ask a question of artist Ben Wood, a guaranteed good guy, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Do we have a call on the line already without even my giving out the number? Yeah. Okay. put your headphones on there, Ben, and then let's see. Welcome to the show. What is your question or comment for Ben Wood?
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Actually, I was calling for a workover, even though it is arts-related. Should I call back?
Nah, we're laid back here. You know, why don't you feel free to ask your question.
Okay. Well, I'm turning 65 next month,
uh-huh,
and so it's sort of a combination of last week's show with your wife and this week's show.
Okay.
I have 2 degrees in dance from very, very good programs, and I've been working for the last 25 years as a music and movement teacher for young people,
right,
elementary and middle school.
Right.
And I've been 20 years at the current school where I am now. And, you know, there have been a lot of changes in education and administration and how things are handled and all the non-arts part of the job is increased and increased and increased, plus the kids' behavior has decreased and decreased and decreased. And, you know, I'm really quite burned out about it at the moment. But I still have all my faculties, mental and physical, you know. My brain is still there and my energy is still good. And so I'll be, at the end of the school year, I'll be almost 66, and I can start to collect some Social Security, but I'm still going to need some income, and I'm just looking for some kind of a creative field. I do have a certificate from UC Berkeley, extension in graphic design, but it was from the 80s, so it was all mechanical. I know how to do all the mechanical work, order phototype and do litho windows and all that kind of thing, which is not how it's done anymore. I also really like to work with my hands. I'm a really good seamstress. I design costumes and for the kids' programs, and I, in fact, really love putting together performances. We do performances at Herbst Theater every year, and, you know, some really large-scale, high-quality things. And so I'm looking for, you know, I'm looking for some kind of creative part-time work that I can do after I possibly leave the school next year. And I know that you're in tune with the arts, and I'm just wondering what your ideas might be.
Well, my first take is I'm going to give you the name of somebody. You know, what I'm and as I listen to you, yes, it does seem like your graphic design skills are too obsolete, so I'm not going to push you in that direction. But I know a woman named Lisa Danz, D-A-N-Z. You can Google her. She's a lovely woman, and she is a very busy costume designer. She produced, you know, just enormously complex costumes for large-scale productions, and she may need an assistant. Or at least she knows everybody. She's been around. She's about 60 or 50 or something. She's been around for a while, so she knows everybody in the costuming world. I advise you to, you know, I'm curious what you think about this. Maybe you don't want to do costumes, but since you said you seem to like that, and you've been doing it, you did it at Herbst Theater, no less. What about contacting her and seeing if you can at least get some part-time work doing costume design as her assistant or somebody else's?
That sounds great.
There you go.
That's really interesting. She's here in San Francisco?
No, I think she is, if I remember correctly, she's like somewhere around the 680, like Walnut Creek or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I can see what she's about. And then just in terms of starting my own kind of business, I mean, the obvious thing would be for me to do, to have like a small after-school program for children doing music and movement. I'm an orchestral work specialist, so I do, you know, all the stuff with the orf instruments and beautiful music and everything. But I just really don't want to have to deal with kids.
Right.
I mean, the great kids are super great, you know, but they're two of them that, you know, just want to make you scream. And so, you know, I just don't know that. And I've done work like some work like that with adults, too. I'm wondering if you think there's any real market for people. I mean, for me, I've always found that the scheduling is the problem. When you're offering an adult class in the evenings, everybody's schedules are all over the place and people don't show up every week and all of that. You know, but I do love doing, you know, it's kind of like a higher level, more expanded version of like a drum circle. We're actually really playing music, but you don't have to have a music background because it's learned by ear and by rote. So I don't know. I mean, do you have any other thoughts that might have to do with the, you know, actual teaching of the performing arts?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. First of all, very often when people are kind of sick of the direct contact, they, you know, they kind of lose patience with the idiocy or the scheduling or whatever. Normally, the biggest advantage that somebody who's older has is the wisdom of all the experience, and they train the next generation. Because it's going to be somebody who's in their 20s, who's filled with passion and hasn't, you know, gotten embittered at all yet. And, you know, so had you thought about either finding some younger person, and then you have to be chronologically younger even. It could be just somebody who's maybe has been in corporate America all her life, and now she wants to do something, and so she's filled with, she doesn't have any, all those years of feeling burned out. And working with that person as either an employee or a partner to do either children's or adult stuff. And in terms of scheduling, you know, maybe, you know, you could try different things. I would think Saturday morning is one of those rare times. I know that a lot of my, you know, friends, they'll do yoga or Pilates or group meditations or whatever on Saturday morning. It tends to be a window. Does any of that resonate with you?
Possibly. I was the arts program director at our school. I supervised 12 different teachers until they decided to cut down the program. So I really do like recruiting and supervising part-time teachers in the arts and, you know, helping with collaborations and all of that. It's just a matter of finding a situation where I'll get paid. So, yeah. So you're saying maybe training some younger people to
a younger person. You know, you don't want to make this into a huge business. Find one human being with whom you connect with chemically and who you trust and who may have a complementary skill set and say, hey, let's have a cup of coffee. Let's see if there's a way we can structure this so that it brings out the best in me and it brings out the best in you. And you're not making a major investment, but you try it out. The other thing before I let you go is, you know, as is well known, because there's an artist under every rock and a damn good artist or dancer or singer or performer or whatever under every rock, it's almost impossible. That's maybe too strong, but it's really hard to make a decent living at it. Maybe if you need more money, you take a part-time job of some sort that you get through your network. It could be the former friend, former client, lover, anybody who likes you and knows you, who might need a part-time person to do X, whatever it is. It could be something that you never would have thought of. Ben Wood is doing a job as a front desk receptionist at the Presidio, and yet it's rewarding, and it could either be a launch pad, but it's certainly a source of income. Do you know, you know, and again, Ben also correctly used the word systematic, scientific, relentless, focused, whatever. Could you make a list of the 20 people on planet Earth who like you the most and say, might they know of somebody who might want to utilize you part-time, maybe having nothing to do with movement or dance? What's your reaction?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I've been supporting myself since I was 18, and I put myself through college, and I did everything. I was a baker. I made rubber stamps. I sold tennis rackets, you know, so I don't have any problem with that. I'm fine with that. I just need a decent, you know, working environment, and then that leaves me free to do my artwork on the side.
Exactly, and just be systematic. Yeah. You can't just call one or two low-hanging fruit and expect it's going to bear fruit. You've got to be systematic and identify 10 or 20 people and reach out to them. And when they say, oh, no, I don't know anything. I don't have anybody. No leads for you. Sorry. Ask if they wouldn't mind keeping their ears open for you. They'll always say yes. And ask if they wouldn't mind if you circle back in a month. That recruits 10 or 20 scouts. The odds of them having anything for you at that moment are trivially low. But over a month, the 10 or 20 of them might indeed have a lead for you, and you could end up at the Presidio, whatever.
That sounds great. All right. Okay, Marty. Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling. Work with Marty Nemco. I guess this is as good a time as any to invite you to call if you want to work over whatever your work problem is, whether you're in the sciences or the arts, you're a people person or a hands-on person. As long as you've got a work problem, that is what I'm here for. The phone number here, and the price is right, it's zero, zippo, nada. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. For what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I also, you know, Ben Wood is still here, so if you've got a question for Ben or a comment about him and his life as an artist and how it might affect you, the phone number again, 415-841-4134. And I'm just going to wait for a moment because the calls are coming right in, so let's do that in a moment. And I'll just say, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What is your question for Ben or me?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, it's Linda. I have a comment for your last caller who was looking for work.
Great.
Teaching in the arts, actually.
Yes.
And I want to put a plug in for the Ruth Asala School of the Arts in San Francisco, which hires a lot of artists in residence in all of their different areas. And they have 14 different arts tracks. And I heard her say that, you know, she's in body movement and she also does, you know, costuming and all of that. And so they hire people part-time on contracts for, you know, it could be a couple hours a week or a master class or whatever. But they every year they hire probably, you know, between 70 and 80 artists in residence. So she might want to look into that.
Okay, well, I didn't hear the name of it. What's the name of it?
Oh, it's Ruth Asawa School of the
Arts. Oh, Ruth Asawa. Oh, I remember her. Ruth A-S-A-W-A. Right, Ruth Asawa.
Yeah.
Yes, anyway.
School of the Arts.
Thank you very much for the call. Ben, I noticed you making various faces. Is there...
It's just because I applied. I live right next door to it, to the Ruth Zawa School.
And what's your truth about?
I was
about?
In touch with them, and I never heard back from them.
See, now that really speaks to the reality. I mean, here is this MIT-trained guy who's done major public projects at the Haas Lilienthal House, at Coy Tower, for the city of San Francisco Parks and Rec, and he didn't even get a response from the Ruth Asawa School. It's, as they say, it is not for the faint-hearted. Again, a phone number if you want to work over you want some help with your career, or you have a question or comment about the artist's life and that you want to ask or tell to Ben Wood, phone number 415. This is Work with Marty and M. Cohen, KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for your calls, I thought it might be a reasonable transition to talk about other hands-on careers other than artist. And the one I like to talk about first is the one that comes up near the top of almost every job satisfaction survey. It's hair cutter. Its appearance is so important to so many people. And hair cutters make most customers happy. Plus, you can develop ongoing relationships with them. And the work atmosphere is pleasant. And the hours are regular. You know, nobody's going to call you 2 in the morning, I have a hair emergency. So, as with most people-centric careers, though, you have to be not only competent, but you have to be likable, because it's all people want to look forward to coming to get their hair cut, both because the haircut is done well, but they like chatting. Many, not everybody, but many do. But if that sounds like you, and that ain't going to get, it can't get offshored. Nobody in 3,000 miles away is going to be cutting your hair. Right, and it's a basic. It's not in good times and bad. No matter what the economy is going to do, you're going to need your haircut. And I noticed there were studies that show that even in the depths of the recession, makeup sales did not go down at all. So, you know, haircutter is it's got a lot going for it, especially if you remember that status is the enemy of contentment. Even if you have a PhD, yes, being a haircutter doesn't have a lot of status, but I know a heck of a lot of people with high-status jobs who are miserable, getting drunk or stoned in their fancy house all the time, and a lot of happier haircutters. Anyway, phone number here for a workover, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello.
Is it me?
Hi, it is.
Oh, yay. I was just wondering how your guest, Ben Wood, got his job at the Presidio.
Ben, how'd you get your job at the Presidio?
Who is this?
She's a caller.
Oh, okay. Actually, it's a good story. I'm actually from England, as you can hear from my accent. I'm quite reserved, and I don't normally necessarily ask people questions. My wife, Rachel, is from the East Coast. It might be that she's an East Coast girl because she's American. She's more outgoing. She had the audacity to ask this guy at the front desk in the Presidio, you know, how he got his job. And he gave me actually the contact info for... it was a staffing agency, and I showed up there the next week, and I said, hey, you know, I'd really want to work at the Presidio. And then the next week they came back and they said, there's an opportunity. So that's how it came about.
You know, showing up is so important. And you know, I love telling these two stories. At Harvard, at the orientations, at least, I don't know if they still do, but at some point, at every orientation, the orientation leaders were told to say that the key to all the incoming students, that the key to success at Harvard is asking for what you want. And when they say no, ask somebody else. The other thing is this: the story about showing up. If I called you, Ben Wood, in the middle of the night, and let's say I was straight, you didn't know me, but I was a stranger, I say, hey, excuse me, I have a baby that I really need somebody to take care of for a few hours until the morning, and then I'll come pick the baby up. Would you say yes, or would you think, or likely not?
No, I wouldn't.
Right.
I mean, I'm a friendly guy. I might actually help you out, but I think regular people probably
right, as opposed to irregular Ben. Yeah. But if the doorbell rang at 3 in the morning and you open the door and the baby is there in a cradle on the doorstep, would you take the baby in?
Yes, of course.
Exactly. So that's the example of showing up. It's easy to ignore or reject an email. It's much harder to reject a person showing up. And especially if you're prepossessing. I mean, Ben is an example. He's pretty handsome. and he's understated. He's not a pushy person. And so coming, walking in an understated way, not like a basket case. I'm not saying your head's slumped and you look like you're depressed, but coming in an understated but modestly assertive way can be often a way. It's not going to get you a job as a corporate president, but especially if you're looking for a launch pad job, something that can open a door, walking in can't hurt. I remember when my wife first came to California, and she was an educator, a reading teacher, reading specialist. What we did was we this was in the old days of the maps that you would get at a gas station. We got one of those maps, and we simply put an X. It was a map of the East Bay of Oakland and Berkeley. And we put an X next to every district county office, every school district office, so we could make a loop. And we simply went with her and her resume, and we drove around in that loop, and I would park in the double park or whatever, and she would go in and do her song and dance, ask if she could speak to somebody, leave her resume or whatever. And I swear, within 1 week, she got 3 job offers. So, again, Barbara is prepossessing. It's something that, you know, many people can't do. But don't ignore the possibilities of walking in. Make sense? All right. We have another call. Other calls on the line. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Is this me?
It is.
How you doing?
Hello.
Hi. I've called you previously, found you very helpful.
Thank you.
And I'm really pleased that they're keeping the show on.
Me too.
I have a rather less artistic job. I've worked for almost a decade in one of California's local governments. Mm-hmm. You know, one of California's governments, we'll say it's a county.
Okay.
And I've been the office I work in is extremely political. Mm-hmm. It's very tied to the higher workings of the government. So there's always a certain amount of political tension that's going to exist. That's just naturally part of it. I have decided that that's not for me anymore, and I want to transfer. I do enjoy working for the entity, but I want to transfer to an office where that's dialed back a bit.
Sure.
And I'd like some advice on how to rephrase that into a positive. I mean, of course, I can say to you, yeah, I want to get out of this, but of course, I need to rephrase it into what I want to move towards.
Right. And so let's focus on skills. We don't need to necessarily talk about the political culture. What do you bring to the table? What do you want to do? What kind of, many jobs have a variety of tests, but what is the one or two things that you do best that might be useful in some other agency, some other office within that government, so you don't lose your retirement, PERS or whatever?
Right, exactly. I would say that based on the feedback I've received, my verbal writing and proofreading skills.
Great.
In other words, my English skills. And then also I have a way of what they call working my magic, getting things done through the bureaucracy. However, sometimes that can get me in trouble as well as... Mm-hmm. Help, if that makes sense.
And do you like that getting stuff through the bureaucracy, like being customer facing? So, for example, somebody who's applying to Social Security and has an anomalous situation, needs somebody who can really work the system well, or is it more internal to help things get done internally within the system, or both?
I do both. My preference being internal customers, but I have I've developed experience working with external customers as well.
Great. So one of the ways you can pitch it positively would be to either, as a plan, within your county or district or city or state or federal government or whatever it is, looking for for job listings that would be writing centric, research centric, and efficiency centric, not political centric, but more in terms of working within a complex system. And then, both applying through the front door, that is just simply answering ads, but also, if you've been in government for a while, you may have some people you know, and instead of saying, I'm looking to get out of this damn political place,
right.
I'm looking for a job that's more writing and editing centric, as well as somebody who understands how to work their way through the government bureaucracy. So you're describing what you do best and not necessarily having to badmouth at all the existing entity. To what extent does that address your issue?
Very well.
Okay. Well, then I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you. Bye.
We only have a few minutes left, so I don't like to just leave hanging. I said I wanted to talk about some hands-on careers, and I gave an example of haircutter. I want to give just a few more here so that you're left hopefully with your head spinning and realize that there really are lots of options. Nothing in life is easy. There are no easy jobs anymore. There is no low-hanging fruit unless you're really super well-connected or this absolutely superstar genius person. But there are jobs that especially are under the radar. And if you just, one of my core messages is go under the radar. Don't do what everybody wants to be in broadcasting. Everybody wants to be in the environment. Everybody wants to be in fashion or sports or whatever. Once you enter the, and they want to work at Google, and they want to work at Facebook, and they're going to work at Apple, or they want to work at Berkeley or Stanford, those are top of mind for too many people. And so the competition is fierce. You want to try to go under the radar. Everybody wants to be a doctor. They want to be a lawyer. They want to be a social worker. They want to be a teacher. The markets tend to be too crowded. So I'm going to talk here about hands-on careers that are less top of mind for lots of people. For example, we all know that healthcare is big, but we all think of doctor and nurse or physical therapist. Diagnostic imaging is a growing field because we get ever better. It used to be it was x-rays, and then it was CAT scans, then it was MRIs. There are constantly more advanced imaging technologies which really end up being cost-saving. Cost-saving is going to be huge because we are going to end up covering everybody. So being a diagnostic imaging technician, whether it be for your basic x-rays or fluoroscopes or sonograms or CAT scans or MRIs or CTs or PETs, they're continually growing. And it's going to be a career that is not going away. And so it can't be offshore because you're positioning the patient, you're adjusting the dials right, the lenses right, etc. It's going to be a great under-the-radar healthcare career, diagnostic imaging technician. While we're on these biological spaces, there is endless improvements in the diagnostic use of blood tests, urine tests, tissue samples, all that stuff. And again, that's a lot cheaper than invasive tests, and the field is ever-changing. And the biotechs, the biological technicians, they get to rotate across test types. So it can be a surprisingly interesting career. They also work in research labs, for example, using DNA samples from humans or other animals and plants in order to better do genetic testing, genetic research to identify the genetic and biological roots of disease. Anyway, before I'm looking at the clock, the show is essentially over, but I want to say this is like the last minute I can do this until May. I'd like you to ask you to support KALW, not just because they chose to really be responsive to listeners and keep me on the air, in fact move me to a better time starting in November, but because if you value public non-commercial radio, local public non-commercial radio, this is the time to do it. It's a great time to support it. And for $100, as my thank you to you, I'll give you a free copy of my brand new books, autographed, The Best of Marty Nemko, as well as Modern Fables. Go to either kalw.org, that's kalw.org, or 1-800-525-9917. And I want to thank their listeners who are really wonderful in calling in. Mary Phillips in Oakland wrote, "Thank you, KALW, for Le Show and Marty Nemko, among other shows. Thank you." This is what she writes. She writes, "Thank you for treating the listeners like they should have a real say." She writes, "So," with capital letters, "appreciated." And I appreciate you all very much for listening and supporting KALW by going to kalw.org. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, my guest, Ben Wood, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers and career so-called truths that I no longer think are so true. Plus, top 10 careers for world people, speaking careers and writing careers. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.